So far as we've looked through this book of Nehemiah, we've seen how Nehemiah's found out about the state of Jerusalem, how he's so burdened for it, how he's come before the king as his cupbearer, and how the king has asked him what's the problem, and Nehemiah has told him, and the king has given him permission to go to Jerusalem and to see what he can do about the situation there. And so we left it at verse 8, where of course he asked for letters and a permit, because he had quite a long journey, of course, to Jerusalem. And so we find out in verse 9, "Then I went to the governors in the region beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me." And so all the preparation has been done. Nehemiah has been praying and preparing for this trip to Jerusalem. And so now he begins his journey. And it talks about there in verse 9, beyond the river. What it means is, that means east of the river Euphrates. And the king, it's interesting, isn't it? This is amazing, that you have this pagan king who has a concern for Nehemiah, and he gives him an escort. "The king granted them to me," it says in verse 8, and now the king, verse 9, "the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me." It shows, you see, that this king is concerned for the safety of Nehemiah. And it's a long journey, and there might well be bandits and goodness knows what on the way. And there is a need for protection. And we too must be concerned ourselves. We're concerned about our ministries. The ministry of the church. We don't do anything foolhardy. We don't do anything rash. We pray about things. We may try and plan about things. We seek the Lord's will. We seek the Lord's guidance. And of course, most of all, we seek the Lord's protection. And it's interesting, isn't it? Here we have a pagan king who is so concerned about one of his cupbearers. And it's a reminder for any of us who may be involved in employing people. And that's not just, of course, the work situation. We all ask people to do work for us, don't we? Perhaps gardening, plumbing, electrics, bit of do-it-yourself, whatever. We have to treat them with respect and honesty and integrity. And what an encouragement that when this king sent Nehemiah off on his mission, he also gave him protection. And we can apply that on a further thing, that whatever the Lord would have us do, he will protect us. That doesn't mean to say nothing ever nasty will happen to us. If you do anything outside, you're bound sometimes, occasionally, to get hostility and some aggression. But the Lord watches over. The Lord watches over everything. And I'm sure, like me, you've read many testimonies of how the Lord has protected his people in certain circumstances. And it seems that these soldiers, they stayed in Jerusalem, apparently for Nehemiah's protection. Further on in the book, in chapter 4 and verse 23, we read this: "So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me, took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing." So those soldiers were there all the time. But of course, it doesn't take long when you are involved with a work for the Lord for the opposition, for Satan to come in to try and put a spoke in the wheel. And then we meet these two characters, don't we, in verse 10. Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite. And according to this, they're officials. But they're interested. It says here they were deeply disturbed that a man had come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel. What sad commentary on these two characters. They are deeply disturbed that Nehemiah has come to seek the well-being of the people of God. Very similar today, isn't it? In many places in the world today, there's no affection for the church, for the true church, I mean, for the people of God. They're persecuted, hounded, put down. In this country, we're mocked, ignored, ridiculed. Here we have Sanballat. Do you know what this name actually means? It means sin has given life. Interesting, isn't it? And sin, and this is not sin as we know sin, this is capital S sin, and sin is the name of the moon god. So he's named after a false god. And his birthplace was a place called Horonaim, hence the calling a Horonite. And we can find examples of that place, Horonaim, in Isaiah and in Jeremiah. I'll just read the Jeremiah one. It's in Jeremiah 48 and verse 3. And it says this: "A voice crying shall be from Horonaim, plundering and great destruction." Sanballat at this time was governor of Samaria. And apparently there is a document somewhere mentioning Sanballat's sons as being governors in Samaria in 408 BC. And here we have Tobiah, the Ammonite official. Or another word for official could be servant. Maybe he's worked his way up a bit. Maybe he's advanced to his present position and power that he has. But you see their background, the Horonite worshipping the moon god, and Tobiah the Ammonite, would give you some indication they would have hostility to the Jewish people. And I suppose the description of what he would be there, they call him an official. It could be like a district magistrate, working alongside, but on behalf of Sanballat. And what a sad motivation made these two men tick. There's no joy in their hearts. Their mission in life was to hinder the work of the Lord. And that's true of today. And if you don't believe me, just go and join an open air meeting. And there will always be one or two that come to hinder. Some very subtly. They'll engage you in conversation and try and get you occupied for the next half hour with go around the houses, but doing nothing. What they're doing is stopping you talking to people that may be genuinely interested. Then there will be those who are much more outgoing and aggressive, who have a real hate for the gospel. It's never stopped, it never will do. But again, when it happens, the Lord gives grace to cope with it. You see, what their problem is, these two characters, is they realise that what Nehemiah is not there for their good, he's there for the people of God, for the people in Jerusalem. He didn't probably know too much at the moment about what Nehemiah's plans are. But he knows he's not come there for the good of his health. He's not on holiday. He's gone on a mission. And of course, if Jerusalem begins to prosper, what's going to happen to Sanballat's Samaria? It will decline. So probably coming into this, apart from their natural antagonism and bitterness against the people of God, is perhaps a bit of pride and a bit of jealousy. There is so much, isn't there, that can just take off the edge of our service for Christ. So easy to have pride ourselves, isn't it? I'm glad I'm not like him or her. Or jealousy. Oh, I wish we could have a bigger church like so and so down the road. They've got a rota for their music. We ain't got anyone. Oh, I wish. Well, we can wish, I suppose, but so easy, isn't it? You know, the Lord supplies. If he doesn't think we need one, he won't give us one. We need to be aware that we don't become discontent. Discontent can make us sad people and lead us into a spiritual vacuum. And so what happens? He arrives. I came, verse 11, I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. So Nehemiah has arrived in Jerusalem. There seems to be no one there to greet him, which is probably what he wanted anyhow. Or nobody came to call upon him. He remains there in Jerusalem for 3 days, unknown. And that's how he wants it, as we discover in a couple of verses on. And no doubt, as he approached, and as he went to where he was going to stay, he must have been deeply affected by the desolation that he saw. And I ask myself, am I desolate at the state of our country? Now, I know we ain't got a load of ruins, although there are places where there are problems. I know some hospitals and schools. But the moral decadence, the way that we mentioned the appalling abortion rate, the drive for killing people who are not terminally ill. And so it goes on and on. The immorality, the corruption. And it's all because we've left God out of the picture. And that's how we need to have such a burden for our people, that the Lord would yet have mercy. We may not be able to do it physically, but to pray for the open air mission, to pray for United Beach Missions, to pray for Christian Answer, to pray for Christian Camps, and so on. That the Lord will save people, not just give them some information about the gospel, but actually save them and bring them from darkness to light and turn them into effective servants for Christ. So he's there for 3 days. And then he makes his move, or his first move. It tells us there in verse 12, doesn't it? I arose in the night, I and a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Nor was there any animal with me except the one on which I rode. You see, it's at night that Nehemiah makes his first move. He has concealed his intentions and his actions as long as he could. And at the moment he is aware that the success of his ministry depended upon secrecy. Notice he only takes one animal with him. He wants to be as quiet as possible. And the more animals you've got trampled around the place, the more noise you make. He doesn't want to draw attention to himself. And also, by doing this recce, Nehemiah will find out the true magnitude of the task that lay before him. And isn't it true as well that we need to know about the task that we have, that we don't go blindly in? One of the things we used to discover when doing a door-to-door, where do the fierce dogs live? Where does this religion live? And that religion? And all manner of things. Now, people may take very little notice of Nehemiah, what they could see of him. But he took great notice of them and the state of their city. Helps, doesn't it, to be observant? I learnt to do that much up at Beachy Head. Who are the ones that really do look down and ready to go? Do people look unwell? Do they look more sad than perhaps normal? Is there some way that we can get alongside? And he chooses a night when there's moonlight. And I'm sure, as you know, if you go out into the country on a really full moon, you don't need a torch. You can see almost quite clearly. He needed to know, you see, what's got to be done. Whether the old foundations would be strong enough. And what materials he was going to need. As indeed we must always consider the work that we are engaged for in the Lord and plan accordingly. We need to see things with our own eyes and not just rely on the reports of others. Sometimes we must know and see what is wrong with the Lord's help. We then hopefully start to put things right. And so verse 13 begins, he begins his journey. And I went out by through the valley gate and so on. That gate opened to the valley of Hinnom, known often as the Valley Gate, as it is there. And it talks about the serpent well. In the Authorized Version, it calls it the dragon well. In other words, it's a fountain, actually it's a fountain of water. And the refuse gate is a posh word of calling it the dung gate, which is obviously what it was used for, to remove the offal and excrement taken out of the city. In other words, it was one huge, utter mess. And so he moves on around the city. He goes to different places. Tells us there he goes to the fountain gate and to the king's pool. But then there was no room for the animal under me to pass. Must have been an awful lot of rubbish accumulated for Nehemiah to get by on his journey. No doubt the grain was rough and encumbered with fallen masonry. And we have to be so careful that so much rubbish can obstruct our Christian walk. Getting involved in things that we have no need to be involved in. And so he carries on, round. He goes past the brook, there in verse 15, tells us that I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall, and then I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And so he does this. And indeed, in so doing, Nehemiah makes a circuit of the city. He turns and he re-enters in by the valley gate. In other words, he returned and came back in from the very gate that he'd gone out of. And in verse 16 it says this, and the officials, and we know who they are, Sanballat and Tobiah, and the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. It's interesting that last phrase in that verse, the others that did the work. Nehemiah has told nobody about his plans. He's kept them to himself. He will make his plans first for how he's going to approach and do and encourage and enable people to do the repairs of the walls and gates there in Jerusalem. He's waiting till it's all in readiness. And he knows that the people that would probably upset the apple cart the most would be those that shouldn't do. So he doesn't mention it to the principal authorities in the cities. Maybe if they'd known of his intentions, they would have taken steps to stop them or circumvent them. But as I say, I'm very interested, and I read this in a commentary about this, to the rest that did the work. These were the labourers. They were the ones in the main who actually rebuilt the walls. There were one or two nobles, as the later on the chapter 3 will describe, who had responsibility for bits here and bits there. You know, when it comes to the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, there is an ocean of committees and conferences and books and leaflets on how to do it. But you know, it's the doers that matter. The doers that matter. And it's amazing that when you start getting involved in that, hey, so many people will tell you what you're doing wrong. But as someone once said to a critic we had in an open-air meeting once, He said, the evangelism I do ain't much good, but it's better than the evangelism you don't do. So it's doing it, isn't it? Doing is it that what matters. And whatever that task is, and we all have our different tasks in the Lord's service, because we're all at different stages of life and witness and service and everything else. What it matters most of all is that we do it. We carry it out. With, of course, the Lord's help and with the Lord's enabling. And look to Him for all that we need. Well, may the Lord help us as we continue here and others in their situations to know the wisdom, guiding and leading of the Lord, and most of all to stay true to His calling, to His word, to the task He's given us to do. Let's just pray for a moment.